Welcome to Stories in the Valley. I am your host, Charles Kernan. The Story Slam has come to the Lehigh Valley. It is happening right now while I talk to you. But don't worry, it happens every month, on the third Wednesday at the Red Stag Pub. Since you are not there right now, I'm going to give you a taste of what you would hear if you were. This is an edited version of one of their podcasts. To hear it in its entirety, go to LehighValleyStoriesSlam.com. All one word. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Lehigh Valley Story Slam podcast. I'm Jim Breslin. Our debut of the Lehigh Valley Story Slam was held on May 20 at the Red Stag Pub and Whiskey Bar right in Bethlehem, and the theme of the night was new beginnings. It was a great turnout. They had to bring out some more chairs for us. It was a lot of fun. Let's start by hearing the first story, the winning story, from Chris Singlehart.
You could say that I have a zest for living. I want to do more with my life than the average Jane. So last year, I compiled a short list of things I wanted to do before I turned 50. You see, I've been a stay-at-home mom for 20 years, and a couple years ago, I went back into the workforce because I didn't want to move into a cardboard box. But now that my kids are getting older and a little more self-sufficient, it's time for me to start with some hobbies. My oldest is getting married in a couple of months. I've still got two in college. I've got two in high school, and I've got a middle schooler starting in the fall. That's six if you're counting. It's time for some stress relief, right? So on my list, I'm going to run a marathon. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to visit India. I'm going to learn to play the drums. But on the top of the list is what I think is going to be the easiest of them all, skydiving. Yeah. So this I hear is great stress relief. But the funny thing is, because of my lifestyle, it's almost like a stressor just trying to schedule it. So here's what my day looks like. I go to work, I go to pick up the one daughter from her job, pick up the other daughter from school, take this daughter back to her second job, take my ground support daughter, get on the turnpike, drive for about an hour to get to the little rinky-dink airport, jump out of a plane, get back home, have a late dinner with the rest of the fam, and go to work the next morning, no problem, right? So this is exactly what I do. I show up at the airport, and I'm telling you, rinky-dink, okay? So it's just like a little shed with a sign on the door. I'm at the right place, okay. Girl with bare feet comes out to greet me. Since you need the ladies' room, of course, okay? So you go out this gate, walk along the fence in the grass to this other building out there. I go into this shed. It's decorated from the 70s, okay? I use the restroom. There's tiles missing from the floor. There's fixtures dangling off the wall, and I'm saying, dear God, please let them take better care of their airplanes. So I go back in. Barefoot girl gives me a clipboard where I have to sign my life away. I have a seat on the bench. Next to me is my instructor, I suppose, and a little kid who's chomping on a bag of chips. She's got another friend coming in, also in bare feet, sitting on the desk, talking away while I'm signing my life away, right? But she has to show me a video first. And on this video, first comes out this gentleman with the beard down to here, and he says, "I am the inventor of the tandem parachute." Okay, you know, Samson got his physical strength from his hair, so maybe there's some kind of intellectual osmosis through the facial hair or something like that. Next comes on this woman in a business suit sitting behind a desk stacked with books, and the camera angles down here, and she says, "I am a lawyer in the state of Pennsylvania." Okay, and then she starts showing pictures of ambulances and all these things, and I'm supposed to check about 62 boxes and initial each one of these, like, if I die, I'm not gonna sue, not a problem, okay? I'll be dead. I think I had to say, if I do die, my spirit is not gonna come back to haunt this airport. Again, not a problem, because if my spirit does come back, I think I'm gonna remodel the bathroom. Which, by the way, did not even have a sign saying, like, pardon our appearance, we're trying to improve our service. No, nothing like that. So in this room, also decorated in 70s decor with faded posters, the instructor says, get down on the floor. Okay, he's gonna teach me now. put your knees up to your chest, hug them tight. You're going to be, you're going to be behind the pilot seat. When I say turn around, you turn around, you grab onto this bar, but don't hold onto this one because that's the door of the airplane, okay? You're going to flip, really, really quick. And I'm thinking, this is it? Wait a minute, I don't have it yet. You'll be good. They suit me up. We get into the plane. It's the size of my car. It has one seat in it. That's for the pilot only. I'm sitting behind him, just like he told me to. My instructor is in the same position but facing me. It's so tight, my foot is about 2 inches from his crotch. I'm like, careful, don't move. Next to him is the photographer that I hired because, you know, pics or it didn't happen, right? In front of her, listen to this, the most experienced skydiver in the world. He's in the Guinness Book of World Records, most dives in a day, most dives in a lifetime. Incredible. Next to me, in front of him, in this little plane, two more skydivers. Now, they're looking all stealth in their sleek suit. They got their helmets. They got the bands with the tells the elevation. They got the gloves, the goggles, the whole thing. I start looking at myself. They put me in some jumpsuit like the car auto mechanic wears. And my goggles are like the flimsy, like you what you would wear like to a masquerade party, you know? So I look at my instructor and I'm like, hey, the helmets. What's the helmet? He says, well, you're going down in front of me, so it would hit my chin. Oh. That makes sense, right? So anyway, time to go. Boom, I'm out. Awesome, 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 awesome. Free falling, 10,000 feet, 125 miles an hour, the best experience. I do a safe landing. The only thing, my right arm falls asleep because I remember I'm dragging down a full-grown man on my back, and so the harness digs in. So I just decide the only way to make this experience better is to train to dive solo. So that's what I'll be doing after I run my first marathon this September. I hope I could come back to tell you about it. And no more judgments on their lack of shoes or furnishings, because I could understand wanting to do that all the time. Hey, listen, this world tells you you can have it all. You can have the career, the house, the family, the vacations, the hobbies, and that may be true. But it doesn't always happen in the same season. So whatever season you are in life, may God bless you and bless your new beginnings. Thank you very much.
Chris Singlehart is a writer. You can follow her on Facebook or check out her blog, chrissinglehart.com. Next, we have a humorous story from Anna Rose Ingara Milch.
My name is Anna Rose Ingara Milch. You're welcome. Is anybody here by the name of Anna Rose?
No.
No, I didn't think so. There usually isn't, but let me just tell you about my name. Anna Rose is my maternal grandmother's name. My maternal grandmother, my mother's mother, had 18 children. Whenever I say it, I get a stomach ache. And each one of her children, so each one of my aunts and uncles, who had a child, the first daughter, was named Anna Rose. So this is a big Italian family. So basically there's a boatload of us, you know? So when I first met my husband, Charles, he came to work where I was working. I'm a retired probation officer. And he said to me, one of those, guys, oh, what's your name, little girl? One of those looks. So I said, it's Anna Rose. And he said, that's such a unique name. And I said, are you out of your freaking mind? Everybody I know is named Anna Rose. So we ended up getting married. We've been married for about 40 years. And we now, like I said, I'm a retired probation officer. And then we started a business together. So for the last 15 years, we've been together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And as he reminded me on leap year that we have been blessed with an additional day. So it's very good. It's very warming to me. So I'm supposed to tell you about some new beginnings. So if you're a woman, and all the women in this room I think can agree with me, is that we have new beginnings all the time, We just continue to reinvent ourselves. It doesn't really matter what day of the week it is. Today I am this. Well, today I am an author. For the last couple of years, I've written a book called Lunch with Lucille. And one of the things that I have learned about this, about writing or doing anything really, is that for any new beginning to happen, we really need to change our perspective. I mean, that's really the fundamental of any new beginning. Like I told you, I work with my husband, Charles, and so on this one occasion, on many occasions, it's a training and consulting business. And so we work together in the same room, and on this one occasion, we walk into the building, and the security guard says, Anna Rose, you'll be speaking in this room down the hallway, and Charles, please take this elevator and go to the third floor. You'll be working in the third floor conference room. So we said, okay, and you know, we do our little, okay, hon, good luck. You know, so nobody sees us because we're professionals, you know. He goes, he takes his elevator up, I go into my room, and what happens is in my room is I have a routine. This is what I do every time I do a speaking engagement. I go into the room, I survey the room, I make sure my AV equipment is working, you know, all that stuff. I really get comfortable, and I like to meet and greet the people. I like to touch the people. I'd like to get to know them, look them in the eye. Then I leave and I go to the bathroom. And so I go to the bathroom and try to make sure the hair is doing what it's supposed to be doing, but it's gray, so it's reached a certain age, it does whatever the hell it wants to do. And then I, you know, I check my teeth, is anything in my teeth, and you know, all that stuff, you know, and then I use the facilities. Then I go back in and I'm ready for showtime. So I go to the bathroom, I do that, I get into the bathroom, and it's a typical bathroom, women's room. There's 14 women and two stalls. And I said, oh man, if I get on this line, they're gonna call my name in the other room, and I'm gonna be in the bathroom, you know? Just my luck. So I go back to the security guard, and he says to me, no problem, Anna Rose, there's a bathroom on every single floor. So I go, okay, you know, and I just, you know, I get a little psyched. I'm always in a zone, so to speak. I go to the elevator, and I hit the button, and I step into the elevator, and thankfully there's nobody in there, because right, I'm in my zone now, and I get in, and I hit the button, I stand there, and I wait for the door, and I hear and I feel it, and I hear it, and it goes, you know, I don't know, you know, what an elevator does. And I hear it, and then I look, and there, the doors don't open. I said, oh my God. I hit again, second button, up, boom, nothing. Oh my God, now the armpits are starting to sweat. I said, look, I'm gonna go to the third floor, I'm gonna do it again. And then when the doors open, the hell with it, I don't have to go to the bathroom, I'm gonna take off my high heels, I'm running down the stairs, I'm gonna get back in the room, forget about it. Sure enough, third floor, nothing. And then I say, like we all do, dear God, please open the door. Now, I don't purport to know what the voice of God sounds like, but in that elevator, at that moment, it sounded just like my husband, Charles. And then I felt this hand on my shoulder, and I look around, and it is my husband, Charles. And he points to the sign and says, all floors except the lobby exit from the rear. So when we start our new beginnings, it begins with changing our perspective.
So Anna Rosengara Milch is the author of Lunch with Lucille, which you can find on Amazon. And our final story is Charles Castano. Charles took us back to 1964 when he first came to America.
I'm not a professional storyteller. This is my first time telling a story in public, so this is a new beginning in and of itself. But that's not what I'm here to talk to you about. The year was 1964. It was just after the Kennedy assassination, and it was around the time that the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show. My parents, my brother and I, were boarding a plane to come to JFK for the first time. I remember the whole family was at the airport and everybody was hugging and crying, I'm not gonna see you again. And it was so exciting because I was just a kid. It was my first time getting in a plane. So we walked down. There was no gangplank or anything. You walked down the runway and then you got into the plane, and it was like this four-engine turboprop and plane, and we were going to be doing a 22-hour flight from Argentina to JFK. So we get in the plane, and I'd never been in a plane before. They close the doors, and we take off, and all this noise and everything. And soon I realized that there was no such thing as a non-smoking flight back then. So for 22 hours, it was like a huge cloud of freaking smoke. Everybody was smoking. That was the thing to do. The women were in like dressed to the nines, you know, all the sexy clothes and the 1960s hats. And the men were in their suits, you know. And so shortly after takeoff, the men found the excuse, oh, I got to stretch my legs, you know. So they would walk back to the back of the plane and smoke away. And what they were really doing was like chit-chatting and checking out the stewardesses, because to be a stewardess back then in an airline, you had to be like Miss America. Otherwise, you couldn't work, you know. So they were like, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to America. You know, it was a big thing. So, you know, every like 4 hours or so, you had to stop and land and refuel this plane because it took so long. So we stopped in, I don't know, Rio de Janeiro and all this stuff. Around 7 in the morning, we landed in Trinidad. And they asked us to deplane because we were going to have breakfast at the airport. Now, I led a very sheltered life in Argentina. I didn't know what bigotry was about. I had no concept of, like when we came here in the 1965, there was the riots in Newark and all this stuff. I had no idea. I had no idea what black people were about. I had no idea why hatred. It didn't exist. So we get off the plane in Trinidad, and I couldn't believe it. We were the only white people in the country. Everybody was black. I look at my mother, it's like, who are these people? I never saw so many black people. Oh, they're black people. Oh my God, they were beautiful. So they take us into this room and they serve us breakfast. The other new beginning, the first, very first time I had scrambled eggs and ham. Oh my God. I couldn't stop eating. It was delicious. I mean, yeah, I'm 11 years old. I couldn't stop eating it. So anyway, my brother was 8 years old. He's like, yeah, la-di-la-di-la. We get back on the plane, and so, you know, finally we get to JFK. And we get to JFK, and we go through customs and everything. You know, we had, like, the green cards. We were, like, legal aliens and all that stuff, you know. So we had people waiting for us. They were going to drive us to Jersey City. This is where we had got an apartment in Jersey City. My father had a job there. So we're exiting the airport, and we didn't speak one word of English. We didn't know anything. Nobody spoke a word of English. So my brother is walking out the airport, and he looks at my father and says, these Americans, they're so nice. In Argentina, they would never put these signs up. Look. They're wishing you success as you walk out the airport. And I look up at this sign, and it says, exit. So, exit, you know, in Spanish, success is éxito. It's my brother. Well, that's my story. Thanks for listening.
These story slams are held at the Red Stag Pub above Granny McCarthy's Tea Room at Donegal Square on Main Street, Bethlehem. Show start at 8 p.m. Seating is limited, so reserve your tickets in advance. The Lehigh Valley Storytelling Guild holds its storytelling circle at Godfrey Daniels at 7 East 4th Street in Bethlehem on the second Wednesdays of the month at 7:30 p.m., except the month of August. Come and listen to stories or try out a story yourself. We are a friendly audience, and the event is free. That's all for now. Have fun and keep a story in your heart.